University. Ring, good morning.
Good morning to you, Sean, and to your listeners.
Thank you very much for joining us. Now, looking at this latest election, the results have come through. What's your take? Were there any surprises?
No. Actually, what has been going on leading up to the results that we have received at the moment, Kenyan, of course, has come from a history where post-electoral violence, it is common through since the time it obtained its own independence from the UK. But basically, leading a week just before the vote starts, the killing of the most senior officials, independent of electoral and boundaries commissions, has really exacerbated the situation in public, and also shaken the public confidence in the possibility of truly and free and fair elections was already low, but this murder significantly undermined it.
Mm. And I know I was looking at a few of the news sites and a bit of social media this week, seeing some really shocking images coming out of previous elections in Kenya. What was actually done to fix those kind of issues, those issues that were brought on and I think best exemplified with the death of Christa Masando in previous years?
There wasn't that much was done, basically, and we have to be careful here because often we hear the narrative in the media that actually ethnicity, it is the major big factor here to why people do go into do commit this unrest and also the violence that usually take place. It's true, blaming the violence merely on this tribalism is too simplistic, basically. Truly, the historical, social, and economical divides between ethnic groups in this country did contribute to the brutality, but the long-running frustrations and disenchantment with political leadership and underplay its part as well. Mm. So basically, you can't. There's no way these issues of violence just be resolved, whether it is through policing or putting some stringent measures in place. Between the independent 1960s and in 2007 elections, Kenya constitution was amended around 30 times, and each time bolstering the power of the presidency at the expense of the judicials and legislative branches of government, and ultimately the expense it is done at the expense of the Kenyan people. By 2000, the National Police Force was widely viewed as corrupt, committed abuses with apparent impunity. Journalists were frequently harassed, and right activists were also subjugated to sort of an harassment as well. Opposition rallies were banned. Judicial killing appeared to be official policy when dealing with Moki Group. The country leadership or leaders appeared to unwillingly unable to deal with the corruption, and many lined their pockets with the Nairobi slums. So basically, as you can hear here for me, basically, there isn't that much was done basically to curtail or to quell the issues that surrounding the violence in the country.
Mm. So essentially, people, the Kenyan people, really just didn't have faith that the government, the system, had their best interest in order and these elections would be fair in previous years. So hopefully that is changing. What is actually the importance of Kenya in leading this leading role in showing fair democratic elections are possible in terms of the rest of the region?
Well, basically, what we are seeing right now in Kenya, ethnicity here play a big role in making up its presence in this East African country. Kenya is a home to more than 40 tribes, and competition for the seats have ever been more serious, with the most Kenyans getting behind their candidates for their own ethnic group. The five largest groups here, we look at the Kikuyu and Kalenjin and Luo and Kamba. These make up 7% of the country, 48 million people. But basically, here, because the only way where the country basically moved forward in actually preventing any sort of an arrest that would take place. Most of the leaders playing an important role deciding the outcome of the elections from these tribes, basically. So with Uhuru Kenyatta come from the Kikuyu tribe, the country's biggest ethnic group, and also looking at the Mr. Raila Odinga, the ensuing isolation and marginalization of the entire community were fully dealt with the independence. So basically, this unrest, at least for the Kenyan, is not good economically and also politically, but this unrest in Kenya would destabilize the region already facing a myriad of challenges. South Sudan, the youngest country in the bloc, is facing a civil war that broke out in 2013, a catastrophic humanitarian crisis in Burundi, an ongoing political unrest that has killed hundreds of people and displaced hundreds of thousands more in government crackdown on the descendants and also opposition group. In Somalia, Al-Shabaab continues to wage war against the newly inaugurated Somali government and poses a security threat to the Kenyan and other neighboring countries. If the violence in Kenya is succumbed to a political violence, regional peace will become more harder to achieve. And economically, inland East African communities members, including Uganda, Rwanda, and South Sudan, will suffer if a repeat of electoral violence occurs, as they rely on Kenya, Mombasa port, and Northern Corridor for their imports of goods. Regardless of electoral outcome, Kenya policies in the region or in political stability will undergo a technical shift, a titanic shift, and its trajectory will shape the region.
Very delicate situation. Ring, thank you very much. Really appreciate you joining us, having a chat with us about this one this morning.
Welcome, Sean.
That was Ring Mayer from the